It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie.
Oh, hey, Keith.
How's it going?
Not too bad. About yourself?
All right. Did you have a nice Labor Day weekend?
Very relaxing.
Very relaxing. I know. I took some time off, though I still did a lot of chart.
I was going to say, but of course you still worked all Sunday.
Lots of chart work over the weekend, and if you've been looking at Billboard.com, you already know why, but we'll tell you all about that in just a second, because, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider, including Spotify now.
Hey, yeah.
So you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Do you subscribe to any podcasts on Spotify? Do you listen to podcasts on Spotify?
No, I hadn't. And then we put our Billboard podcast on there just a couple of weeks ago now. And it made me start looking through, poking through, and realizing that I listen to a lot. I listen to Spotify all the time. I just had never gone to them for podcasts.
I listen to our podcast on Alexa, like through the Amazon.
Alexa just plays her for you?
Well, all I have to do is just say, you know, In case you're listening to us right next to your Alexa, I've now made it go off 5 times. I just ask it to play. I name the podcast, and it says, you know, fetching the latest episode. And I listen, and then as soon as it's done with that first one, it just rolls into the next one, that the oldest one, and it just keeps on going.
Oh, that's magical.
Yeah. So
Listen on Podcast Addict.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, okay, so aside, and now we've talked about how to find us, and thank you, that was great, everyone. So the big news this week on the charts is that BTS's new album, Love Yourself Answer, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart, as expected. It's the K-pop act's second number one, following Love Yourself Tear. And the new album is actually the third in the Korean group's Love Yourself trilogy of albums, which began with the top 10 charting album Love Yourself Her.
Now, as pop fans, you might be wondering why BTS has been the big breakout act of K-pop in America, despite the fact that you probably haven't heard them so much on the radio in the U.S.
So you've probably seen them on TV, including on the Billboard Music Awards and on the American Music Awards.
Yes, cue the ear-piercing screams from the audience.
God, there's so many, I can't believe that!
I mean, Keith and I have been at these Billboard Music Awards when
the
last 2 years BTS have been there. Their fans are like no other fans.
Yeah, they showed up to... They were nominated for Top Social Artist at the 2017...
Correct.
Billboard Music Awards, and Katie and I were doing the red carpet that year. We were interviewing people, and it was just, there was a mob scene at the carpet waiting for them to show up.
Well,
holding,
I mean,
up signs, the
we
whole
have to get to the red carpet hours early, and they beat us there by many hours.
And it
well.
Was like 98 degrees
yeah,
outside.
Oh yeah, Vegas,
sweltering.
May, late May Vegas.
Yeah, oof. So full-on fans were in effect. So, you know, all that said, we thought we'd ring up a Billboard contributor and a K-pop expert, Jeff Benjamin, and chat all things K-pop and BTS with him.
You may have seen Jeff on TV chatting with major news outlets about K-pop, and he's been writing for Billboard since 2011, and he's been on the K-pop beat for years. He literally knows it all. As mentioned in our chat, I've been editing Jeff also for 4 years, and I have gotten an education from him about K-pop, so we figured we'd pass that education on to our listeners.
Yeah, there are still things that, I mean, I would like to think I know a little bit about K-pop acts, but I really, I mean, if I don't, and
exactly.
Katie doesn't, then I would imagine a fair number of the folks listening to this podcast may not know either, because it's just, we know BTS exists, but we don't know much else about how where they came from.
Right. And this is the why they're popular. This is the how it happened, the when it happened.
There is a phrase that Jeff uses in here that I did not understand. And he had to, like, we already recorded this conversation just a little while ago. And I was like, wait, what, huh? How? They do what? It is so interesting. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes. So enjoy our conversation with K-pop expert Jeff Benjamin. All right, welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast, Jeff Benjamin.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Of course, it's an exciting day.
It is. Obviously, with the news, the exciting thing that you speak of is, of course, the news that BTS's Love Yourself Answer has debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart. And we thought there was no one better to speak with about the phenomenon that is BTS than you.
Oh, thank you for thinking of me.
Of course. I mean, as we said before we actually started interviewing you and to introduce you, you've been covering K-pop for years for Billboard. You've been writing for Billboard since 2011. You've been covering like the BTS beat for a long time. So, I mean, by default, the first person that we think of when it comes to K-pop and BTS at Billboard is generally Jeff, generally. So that's why we thought, let's get Jeff on the phone.
But just taking a step back for a second, and let's talk a little bit about the K-pop genre itself, like when it really started and got a foothold in America. What were some of the first acts that started to get some traction in the U.S., Jeff? I'm thinking maybe like Girls Generation?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to go almost, it's been nearly a decade of this at this point. You know, we look back at sort of the very first sort of K-pop artist from that world to chart even on the Billboard 200. That was 2009. That was BoA, she hit number 127, but that was an English language album, actually. BoA, she was a huge solo sensation in Korea, in Japan, all over Asia. But then it wasn't until 2012 that we saw Big Bang and Girls' Generation, a splinter group actually of Girls' Generation, TTS, land their actual K-pop music in Korean on the Billboard 200. And around the same time as BoA, Wonder Girls, another really big girl group, sensational girl group in Korea, was making their way over here. They had some amazing opportunities. They were managed by the same manager as the Jonas Brothers. They had some TV appearances. And again, though, that was them taking their Korean music and putting it into English. They landed on the Hot 100, I believe it was in 2009, with Nobody. A really huge song in Korea that was translated into English and charted here. But again, it kind of took a couple more years, 2012 actually, for Psy, of course, if you remember, in Gangnam Style, to be able to make a dent, really, in the charts. And those, of course, were the first chart hits, but artists were kind of making inroads, starting to tour, make more appearances here in America for a bit. But yeah, when it comes to the actual charts, been about a decade.
I thought Girls' Generation was the sort of the big first look, but I think as you just said all that, it makes me think actually maybe it was the Wonder Girls, because wasn't there a girl group that was on like the Letterman show that got a performance slot on Letterman? Was that Wonder Girls?
Oh, that was Girls' Generation.
Oh, it was Girls' Generation. That's the reason why I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think, early 2012. They performed their, that was their first English song, actually. Again, you can kind of see there was a bit of a trend, right, where they were kind of trying to change their music maybe a bit to be more Western accessible, do it more in English, to kind of maybe appeal to the Western audience, because we didn't have a K-pop star. We didn't have any Asian pop star, really. We still don't really have a representative Asian you know, pop star in that way just yet. BTS is certainly making a play for that, but yeah, it was definitely Girls' Generation. They had a deal with Interscope at the time, and we're kind of making inroads in a big way, but the impact just wasn't exactly felt in the same way we're feeling it now. Call out emergency, I'm watching the phone ring, I'm feeling the scene, my heart.
Crazily, I don't think BTS even existed in 2011, did they? Like, didn't they form a couple
years ago? No, they didn't. They debuted in 2013. June of 2013 is when BTS was made their official debut. They were probably still training at the company at that point.
Okay, so stop. What does training at the company mean? Because that does not usually resonate with, like, so our friends got together, we decided to form a band. Like, what does training at the company mean?
Yeah, and I mean, and it's definitely something that's not foreign to America. You know, I think we remember, you know, especially back in the day, days of Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and prior to that, you know, there were companies that would kind of scout and look out for potential young singers, young people to be able to be part of future bands or future groups that they were envisioning. So just like, you know, maybe how the bands were formed back in the day, here we don't really have that. We have that to an extent here, but in Korea there are different agencies which kind of act as not only the record labels but also the management, the training, the producers. They kind of do everything in-house, so that and they have what they call them trainees, stars that want to be singers but are not yet debuted either as a solo singer or in a group, and they train in these companies sometimes for as little as a couple months to as many as, you know, there have been K-pop trainees who have spent 10 years training before their official debut.
You better be amazing after 10 years of training. Good God. If you don't know how to sing yet, then you have a problem.
I know, right? And, you know, I think it's timing, too, you know. It's tough you want to have the right amount of groups out there. You don't want to overload your company. Typically, it's tougher to have multiple girl groups at one time, so they tend to space out the girl groups when it comes to debuting. You know, BTS, their agency is called Big Hit Entertainment, and they only really have one boy band in BTS and one very, very active group. They have some smaller groups that they manage. They had a girl group that disbanded, but yeah, they kind of, you basically sign with this company, you get trained in everything from not only singing and dancing, but how to act, how to speak different languages, how to go on, you know, radio shows, variety shows, whatever it might be, so that when it is time for your group to officially make their debut and release their debut album, that you are perfect. They call them in K-pop idols, actually. They're K-pop artists, but they're also known as K-pop idols, and BTS actually makes a reference to that in their new song. But the idea, I think, is that they're supposed to be, you know, ideal people you look up to. They're perfect upon debut, and they're only going to get more perfect from there.
And wow. So when did
that's just crazy.
No pressure on them at all. But when did BTS really start to, you know, make an impact here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, right? Because I remember seeing BTS at KCON. KCON is the biggest K-pop festival. It started here in California as a one-day festival, the year of Psy, 2012, and it expanded to now be 3 days at the Staples Center, and it's now bi-coastal. It's 2 days in New York at the Prudential Center. But I remember seeing BTS at KCON 2014, and they were the newest group on the bill. And I think I wrote this. You can even look up the history. You can look up the history that in my KCON 2014 recap, I said, BTS is the newest group on the bill, but you wouldn't have known that based on the screams. Like this group was really connecting in a big way. And then it was really in 2015 when they sort of started. They were doing a lot of touring, a lot of overseas touring, a lot of trying to, you know, because Korea took a while to take notice of them for a while too. But it was in 2015 that I really felt like not only did Korea take notice of them, but so did America. The Most Beautiful Moment in Life Part 2, their EP from late 2015, was their first entry on the Billboard 200. And things have only gotten bigger since then, obviously. But it kind of felt like 2015, they did two tours in 2015. And it felt like at the end of the year when the album charted on the Billboard 200, that's when things really connected kind of worldwide for them. It goes round and round. Now we're 자꾸 돌아오지. I go down and down. 이쯤 되면 내가 바보지. 나 무슨 짓을 해봐도 어쩔 수 없다고. 보면 내 심장 내 맘 내 가슴이.
Why? Okay, so simple question, or maybe not so simple. But why BTS? Like, what is it about them that is enabling their success? You know, in America, and I guess also obviously abroad, because we seem to be sort of on the late freight in comparison to some other countries. But why is BTS the one group, the one K-pop act that seems to have this extraordinary amount of success in America?
Yeah, and I've thought about it a lot, and I really do think, you know, from the get-go, BTS really made sure to put themselves into the music. This can be anything from the fact that they do write and produce and work on the music themselves. Like all the members have contributed in some kind of ways to music throughout the years, especially the rappers in the group. They take a heavy hand in the music. But also, you know, it's them wanting to talk about things that you really weren't seeing a lot of in the K-pop scene. They certainly weren't the first group to kind of open up about their personal struggles or mental health difficulties or politics or commentary on society. But they did it in a way that felt really fresh and authentic. And I think they did that while also being very, very forward-thinking in their music and the way and the sounds and the trends that they were embracing. And so I think not only were they making music that was accessible, sounded good, had a bit more heart to it when fans were able to look up the lyrics or dive deeper into it, but also the group themselves were doing a really great job about just always communicating with the fans, always doing live streams, sharing tweets, talking about, you know, I had a tough day, but, you know, thanks to the fans who cheered me on at this show. They've been really, really good and really, really honest and heartfelt in that way. So I think that just that genuine emotional human side of them has always stayed intact, and they never felt like the sort of untouchable idol. They felt more like a friendly idol, an idol you could be friends with.
Is the way that they're approaching their interaction with fans and the kind of subject matter that they sing about in their songs, is that like strikingly different from other K-pop acts? Is that the one particular thing that they're doing that is really different from a lot of the other acts in K-pop in general?
I think they just really made it a point in their music. You know, it was one of my largest frustrations as someone who has been watching this K-pop scene for, oh my gosh, what, over a half decade now, and you know, seeing even how the Billboard charts and you know, all these things were advancing. And K-pop, you know, they K-pop artists weren't creating social media accounts, or all the accounts were associated with their record label. You know, that there was a large fear of like, you know, a crack, you know, in the mirror, or letting people, you know, I've had nowadays, it almost seems a bit silly because K-pop is very savvy, very, very social media friendly. But for, I think for the longest time, they were a bit scared of what social media could do or how it could open up, open their artists up to criticism or difficulties. And don't get me wrong, it certainly has. There's definitely been controversies and, you know, scandals and things, scandals, I should say, that seem a bit silly to us, but are a bigger deal in the K-pop scene. But BTS from the get-go were really, really great about keeping themselves intact from the beginning, talking about having stories to tell. But their stories themselves also matured. You know, they were kind of talking about bullying and school experiences in their early music, something that young people their age were definitely going through. And then as they got older, they were talking about heartbreak or politics or things that, you know, things that you think about as society, things that you think about when you do get older. So I think it was just making a point to make the journey and make that as part of the make that be part of the narrative rather than just being like a side thought. That was always at the forefront.
And, you know, talking about their appeal in America, do they record much music in English, or have their breakthrough albums and songs been primarily Korean language so far?
No, that's actually been the really interesting part, is that, you know, and is that BTS as a group, at least, has never recorded a full English song. K-pop at its core, if you're a new listener and you haven't checked it out, you know, there's definitely a lot of accessible moments for English speakers. You know, that lots of the song, almost nearly all of the song titles are in English. There's a lot of phrases in English, but BTS is actually, they've actually spoken about this, and their label CEO has spoken about this, that they actually have no interest in recording in English. In fact, they've said, we think, you know, an Asian artist recording music in English is just an Asian artist trying to debut in America. That's not K-pop. We're K-pop. We want to do what K-pop artists do best. There is one member, his name is RM. He's the leader of the group. He speaks fluent English. He's actually laid down verses for a Fall Out Boy song, for a Wale song, and that's been in English. But other than that, you BTS has just stayed consistently Korean or Japanese for their Japanese releases. But yeah, I think that's almost kind of an amazing part of the story too, is that they've never strayed from the Korean even.
That's crazy. I mean that's admirable, but it's interesting. Like, it sort of bucks what I mean. And I guess it's not comparable, but, like, you know,
the easiest comparison is Latin music.
Latin music. You know, Ricky Martin wasn't Ricky Martin until he made his first English album in America, which had "Live in La Vida Loca" on it. He was an entity before that, and he was a big Latin superstar. But he and, you know, Mark Anthony and any number of other Latin stars did not become, you know, sort of global, well, America stars, because they were big outside of America, until they recorded English language albums. But now I think we're seeing it sort of the other way around. We have actually artists who are breaking through that speak Spanish that are having hits.
Yeah, I mean,
on the
look
radio.
At Cardi B. I like it like that. And it's, you know, J Balvin and Bad Bunny, fully Latin. Yeah, fully Spanish. Yep.
And you know what I've thought about this a lot. You guys are like tickling my
K-pop
intellectual
bone.
Funny bone.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, BTS, what I think the issue was, and the reason that I think actually we saw someone like Wonder Girls, who, yes, they landed their first chart hit with an English version of Nobody. Wonder Girls were always a retro-themed group. They had a concept, they had a style through and through, and Nobody, it was like the embodiment of that. Their next English song seemingly did away with everything that they originally stood for. They had this electro auto-tune pop sound. Akon was on the track. It didn't feel like Wonder Girls anymore. The same thing happened with Girls' Generation, where they kind of were almost like they embodied a more sexy style with their first English release. I think the narratives got lost, and what made people fall in love with these artists got a bit lost, and it changed a bit when they were kind of thinking about the Western market. Which is to say, you know, when Ricky Martin was, you know, when he, you know, Live in La Vida Loca was the Live in La Vida Loca, or Cup of Life, whatever it was.
Two different songs.
Well, or those songs still kept those same, I think we still saw Ricky Martin as Ricky Martin, whether it was in English or Spanish. I mean, I don't think his image changed too much, but what I think people fell in love with K-pop, it changed a bit when it was coming to America. And I think it actually made fans, international fans, kind of a bit wary of where K-pop could go in America. It made a lot of fans think, oh no, we don't, if this is what our K-pop artists are going to, you know, turn into, then we don't want American crossover. Hmm. And I after that sort of 2012 era with Psy, Girls Generation, and Wonder Girls, it was a bit quieter. There were still, things were growing, but yeah, we weren't seeing as visible of attempts for a couple more years.
Well, last question, Jeff. You know, with BTS doing so well on the charts, you're like, yes, last question.
No, I hope I haven't bored you guys with this K-pop lesson.
No, we needed this.
We'll find out from people tweeting at us if you bored us. You know, with BTS doing so well on the charts, you know, everyone might be wondering if this is, you know, an isolated success, you know, with in the K-pop genre in America, or if there are other K-pop acts that, you know, could actually follow in their footsteps. I mean, I'm sure everyone asks, like, oh, who got next, basically. But what are some other acts that could actually try to, you know, approach the success of BTS in America?
Sure, yeah. And you know, I think even the first thing to keep in mind is that, you know, of course we remember, you know, we've talked a bit about this, 2012, Psy, Gangnam Style, that was a big breakout moment. And it seemed like, yeah, that there wasn't something so visible, but you know, I've been lovingly watching the scene and writing about it and reporting on it, and the numbers don't lie. I mean, album sales have been growing like year after year, chart positions have been growing year after year, tour numbers have been growing, something like KCON, the festival, has only been growing exponentially with its attendance. The scene is growing in a healthy way, so that even if we don't have another BTS on that level, like, I still see it as something that is going to be part of the conversation. But I really think that you can't ignore what Blackpink is doing. They're a girl group, four members, under the same label, actually, as Psy, or rather Psy's former label. They just had, just this year, a top 40 album with their Square Up EP. They actually just finally broke the record. It was a, oh my gosh, it was like a 4-year record held by another four-member girl group, 21, for highest charting K-pop girl group album in America. And Blackpink not only got a top 40 album, but they also landed on the Hot 100 with their lead single off that. They have a lot of personality, a lot of spunk. Three members who even speak English, which is actually quite rare in a K-pop group. And I just think there's a lot of interest and excitement around them. So I'm particularly gung-ho about them.
Besides, we need more girl groups anyways, frankly. So
yeah, we do. And I mean, you know, it all happens in waves. You know, it's like, you know, when did One Direction kind of broke out around 2012, 2013, you know, we're 5 years later, and now we're kind of having our next boy band round with BTS and, you know, EXO and all these, pretty much, and Why Don't We and all those things. You know, so it's only, and I think the girl groups, you know, are kind of, they're going to come back, you know, soon enough. But if you actually look at like a couple more artists, you know, there's a boy band called Stray Kids who I'm pretty excited about. They kind of have a very similar style, in the sense that they write their own music, they compose and write their own stuff as well. Same with G-Idle, they're a girl group who writes their own stuff. We actually just did their very first U.S. interview when they came to America. I wrote that just last week. Katie, you probably edited
it. Yes, I did.
I think it was last week. Yeah, I really am excited about them. They did some really great numbers right off the bat. And I'm very excited. They have a one member, she's only a teenager, I think, but she writes and produces for the group. It's really been amazing. Luna has this really big international Twitter following. If you've been on Twitter, you probably saw someone telling you to stan Luna. Mm-hmm. NCT is a really big boy band. I don't know. I could
you could name them all, exciting... Jeff, which is what you're doing now.
I'm going to my go-to list in my head, it really could be anyone's game. I don't think anyone thought Psy was going to break out. I don't think anyone thought BTS was going to break out. BTS is actually from quite a small record label in comparison to the other labels in Korea, so they've, you know, it really is, I always feel like it's anyone's game, you know. It's I think as long as that heart, the music is that, you know, and I'll be watching diligently to kind of see what's happening. But I'd say those are some of the artists that I highly suggest keeping your eye on.
Well, I feel like we just gave the Pop Shop listeners a masterclass in K-pop.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it every day from editing Jeff's pieces and our other K-pop writer Tamar's articles every day. So now we've given the people of the podcast listening audience their K-pop lesson. And we really appreciate you chatting with us today, Jeff.
Oh, I appreciate you guys keeping the K-pop alive on the podcast.
Of
so
course.
Thank you.
Of course. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks again to Jeff for taking the time to walk us through all things BTS and K-pop. You can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff_Benjamin.
That's two underscores.
There's only one for Keith_Caulfield. There are two for Jeff_Benjamin.
I wonder if there's just like a Jeff_Benjamin running around that is just getting lots of like tweets about K-pop from lots of fans. Like,
I hope he's a K-pop fan.
Wow. Well, that's a whole lot of K-pop going on. Now you know who to go look for. Was it Blackpink?
NCT.
NCT, which all, and they keep charting too.
There's like five of them. No, there's like a million offshoots of NCT.
There was also an act that he mentioned in there that I think I've been saying their name wrong this entire time. He said it was 21, but I thought their name was 2NE1.
Oh.
So
I didn't even pick up on that.
I guess I should have asked Jeff for clarification.
I think you're right. Is that right? Wow, I think you're right.
Because it's like two, it's like the
so it's like
two
the oh no. Man.
But he said it was 21.
Our apologies also to the people listening to this podcast who are K-pop
fans. Oh god,
fans,
we must be so embarrassing
because,
right now.
Because yes, we work at Billboard, but we are always learning from our, you know, expert people. Just like I am always learning about charts from Keith. We will continue to learn from our genre experts and try to get better.
All we can tell you is that we are going to try our best and get well more versed in this.
Further versed,
yes. Well, now it's time for a rather un-K-pop chart stat of the week. So this week, in 1981, Stevie Nicks hit number one on the Billboard 200 chart with her debut solo album, Belladonna. The album rose to the top of the list, dated September 5th, 1981, and spent just 1 week atop the tally, but 1 week is all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Belladonna came after three hugely successful studio albums Nicks recorded with the band Fleetwood Mac. You may have heard of them. The group's self-titled number one set, the phenomenon that was the album Rumors in 1977, which spent, just 31 weeks at number one, and then Tusk, and it peaked at number four. Fun fact, not in our notes, Tusk features a song, the title track, Tusk, which has a guest appearance by the USC Trojan Marching Band.
You know I knew this already because...
Because I went to USC and I tell
every
so often.
Yeah, it could have had something to do with that. But a marching band, I don't think it was the USC marching band though, but a marching band came out at the Classic West Festival when Fleetwood Mac played. Maybe it was USC.
It may have been USC.
Yeah, it would have been appropriate, obviously.
They tend to drag the USC marching band over to play Tusk. And
I'm sorry, would you need to be dragged?
No,
your...
you don't. And and whenever you go to a sports game, or at least like, you know, USC football game, the band plays Tusk.
Oh.
But we don't say Tusk. We say something else instead in place of Tusk.
What do you say?
Like UCLA sucks. Dun 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 dun.
There it
just
is.
What the crowd does. That's not like an official lyric,
right?
UCLA is our direct rival, anyway.
Yes.
So, still after all that success with Fleetwood Mac in the late 70s, Stevie Nicks struck out on her own, making a splash straight out of the gate with the smash single "Stop Dragging My Heart Around," a duet with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. That was the lead single from this album. The track spent 6 weeks stuck at number 3 on the Hot 100. Couldn't go any higher, gosh darn it. Mm. The album would actually generate 3 more top 40 charting hits, including one of Nicks' most familiar tunes, Edge of 17, just like the White Winged Dove.
Sings the song.
Sounds like she's singing. I believe that's how it goes.
Ooh, sounds right.
Baby, ooh. Ooh.
Said ooh.
Ooh. It reached number 11. Again, it stuck at number 11.
Oh, man.
Almost top 10, gosh darn it.
Top 10 has such a good ring to it, and top 11 just doesn't quite do it.
Not
you can't
so much.
Call a number 11 a top 20. That just doesn't give it enough credit.
That makes it sound like it didn't, like, it's like, oh, so it went to number 19? No, it was
number
11.
No, exactly.
Well, anyways, since Belladonna, Stevie Nicks has charted 5 more top 10 charting efforts on the Billboard 200, including her most recent solo album, the 2014 release 24 Karat Gold, Songs from the Vault.
For which Keith talked to Stevie for the Pop Shop podcast.
That's right, friend of the podcast, Stevie Nicks.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie and I actually saw Stevie on that tour that she did in support of that album.
At the Forum.
Yep. Great
there
show.
There was a cake with her face on it in the Forum Club.
That's right. We didn't eat any of the cake with Stevie's face on it. I didn't see anyone do that. I actually did sort of random. I asked someone, because I guess they do a cake at the Forum for every act that plays
there.
They do, there.
Yes.
And I asked a publicist, I think it was for when Harry Styles played there, and Harry Styles had the cake.
I saw that cake,
and I'm
yes.
like, did anyone actually, does anyone eat this? And they said after the show, they actually do, like once like you're not in there anymore.
Yeah.
So, but I don't
know. One wants to be the first one to cut into Harry Styles' face.
That's weird. Or Stevie's face.
Right.
Well, anyway, Nicks is currently prepping to go out on tour with Fleetwood Mac as their new trek starts on October 3rd in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So, Oklahoma fans, get ready. Here comes Fleetwood Mac. She will also be seen in the upcoming season of American Horror Story Apocalypse as herself. The series premieres on September 12th. I don't know if she's in the whole series. I think she probably has like a small...
There's some fantastic photos online already of her with other stars of the series.
I wonder if because she was in American Horror Story Coven.
Right.
As sort of like the head, well, she played Stevie Nicks in that too, but as sort of a witchy version of Stevie
Witchy
Nicks.
Woman.
A witchy woman. See
so
how
to
high
speak.
She flies. So I wonder if she's coming back as the same character. And
I have
Coven
to say, I don't follow
back?
The show, so
do I
don't know the answer to that question.
Feel free to tweet us and tell us.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, there you have it. This week in 1981, Stevie Nicks topped the Billboard 200 with her debut album, Belladonna. Okie dokie. We've reached the end of our K-pop-tastic.
The K-pop shop.
Mm. Oh, there's going to be like a spin-off podcast called The K-pop Shop.
Dialing Jeff Benjamin.
Seriously. It's like we joke, but then cut to billboard.com in 2 weeks. Hey, everyone. Welcome to The K-pop Shop.
Billboard K-pop Shop.
Any parting words, Katie?
Oh, man. I've learned a lot today.
Yes.
That's my parting words.
If only we were enrolled in a training camp, facility.
We could learn. We could get media training. Maybe we still need media training.
I could do with some of that. Either one of those. I don't know if it will take me 10 years to pull it
Voice
off.
Voice lessons.
You can actually sing, though. I can't.
Mm. The people have heard me sing a few times on here. I don't think that they would agree with you, but I appreciate that.
Well, we can, we can fall down that rabbit hole.
Back to the Edge of 17.
We've already heard Edge of 17 and Stop Dragging My Heart Around. So.
But we probably need another Stevie song, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we don't have to. It could be a K-pop
song.
Well,
if it's cool that it's Fleetwood Mac,
yeah,
let's
sure.
just go on the classic Dreams.
Perfect, and she sings it.
Yes.
See you guys next time.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.